Now, to a remarkable story, Ho Feng Shan. He was a Chinese diplomat based in Vienna, Austria, at the time of the Second World War. Nothing particularly out of the ordinary about that, but what makes him remarkable, in the eyes of many, is his decision to issue visas to thousands of Jewish people, which enabled them to go to China and flee the war in Europe. Above the Drowning Sea, it's a documentary that tells the story of the Jews who left everything to set up home in Shanghai. It'll be screened by the Pure Land series in London this week.
He had nothing in common with the Jews in Vienna who were queuing up at his consulate. And yet, he decided that it was his role to do something to help them.
I had no idea what Shanghai was really like. I mean, it's like going to the moon.
Well, I've been speaking to Carolyn Sue Balser, one of the film's producers, and also to Dr. Carl Bettelheim, who escaped Europe with his parents with the help of Ho Feng Shan.
I was in Vienna in the Anschluss, when the Anschluss happened, about a month before my second birthday. Things got very difficult for my parents. My father, who worked for a Jewish company, the Aryanized, so he lost his job. And then the last straw was he was arrested, and he was basically released with the order that if he's still in the country in 2 weeks' time, he'll be sent to Dachau, which is a concentration camp. So Shanghai came up. That was what he chose.
And what part did Ho Feng Shan play in the process of getting you out of Europe to Shanghai?
Well, they pointed out that Shanghai was an open city, and nevertheless, we got a visa for China because we needed it to get transit visas to get to China.
And in number terms, we're talking, aren't we, Carolyn, of about 3,000 people?
Yes, if you're talking about the number of visas that Ho Feng Shan had issued by the time he was given orders to depart Vienna to go to his next assignment, he had given out about 5,000 visas.
So 5,000 lives were saved, effectively, by his actions?
Yes.
And how big a risk was he taking in doing that?
Well, he had been given direct orders not to give out the visas. And at that time, you know, China was very dependent on getting an arms shipment from Germany. So it was really just based on that arms shipment that Chiang Kai-shek had ordered, don't give out the visas, we don't want to offend the Germans. In my mind, he is a true, what we call a Confucian gentleman. You know, the principles and the ethics that he's imbued with really are the Confucian principles of benevolence and love for humanity.
Carl, what do you know about what happened to you and your family when you got to China?
Well, I know that my father got a job very quickly, a very well-paying job, because he was an accountant. And as far as I'm concerned, it was the financially best 3 years that my parents had in their life. And if it hadn't been for the bad news coming from Europe, I would say they were happiest.
And what happened to your family once the war had ended? Carl, did they stay in China? How long did you stay in China after 1945?
My father got a job with the American Air Force. We tried to get to USA as what was a trial because some family of ours was there. But we didn't get a visa because of the quota system and so on. So finally in 1949, January 49, we left and went back to Vienna.
And even though you were so young at the time, do you feel a sort of an affinity to China as a result?
Absolutely.
How does that demonstrate itself?
I get weak at the limbs when I see it. I wept when we left the city.
I can see the effect it has on you now as I ask.
If you were to come to our place, you'd think you're in a Chinese museum.
And
And Karen, I wonder how typical the emotions are that we've just seen from Carl.
His emotions are very, very typical. Their feelings about Shanghai is really that Shanghai is their home. The people that we interviewed for our documentary, and like Carl, they were all children when they went to Shanghai. So for a child, this becomes home.
Which is interesting as a final thought in the current climate where there is so much discussion about people fleeing conflict around the world and how other countries should behave when faced with that dilemma. What does your film, do you think, say in that context today? Perhaps you, Carolyn, first, and I'll ask you, Carl, too.
The film, definitely, the message is history repeats itself, and it shouldn't repeat itself. So what was happening at the time that Dr. Bettelheim's family was fleeing to Shanghai is happening now, and at that time, all the doors were being shut, crocodile tears, and the same thing happens today. It's terrible, it's terrible. Oh no, we're just full up. We can't take one more person.
Well, I must say that there was never reported an incident of hatred against us. Our people may have been poor, a lot of them. The Chinese around them were poorer. But there was never this, why have they got it and we haven't? We were often invited to our parties, celebrating the Chinese New Year. I remember one of my early ones was, I learned during one evening how to eat with chopsticks.
And having learned, have you always maintained the skill?
Yes. I can pick up a pea.
Dr. Carl Bettelheim and Carolyn Sue Balser talking about the film Above the Drowning Sea. I wonder what, Diane, you take out of what you've just heard.
I think that's an extraordinary story and really wonderful. And I like the idea of a Confucian gentleman. We need more Confucian gentlemen, I think, all across the world who care about humanity and maybe do so at some risk to themselves.
And Giles, what struck you as you listened to it?
Yeah, I thought it was just, it's phenomenal. I think also that it does just raise the point which came up is that history does repeat itself. And I sort of look at what's going on with Brexit, and I think whilst it's a huge piece of economic work to be done, also, you know, come leaving the EU, we as a country need to be focusing much more on what unites us rather than divides us. And I think there's a huge piece of work to be going on. I do remember in number 10 we were always grappling with the issue of refugees and how many you take and sort of the political backdrop around how you present it, and it is, unfortunately, it is an incredibly politically divisive issue.
What was particularly striking as we recorded that conversation was that when I asked Carl Bettelheim about what China means to him now, given that he left the country at the age of, I think he said, 7, I was quite surprised by how almost instantaneously his eyes moistened. And as you heard, he was very emotional about it.
Indeed he was. And it's a sort of a lovely corrective in a way to our notions of China now, which is, as we've just heard in the previous story about China, that it's this repressive state that's not very interested in human rights. But there was this one guy, and there were these people in Shanghai who were welcoming and caring. And countries are complex, cultures are complex. Mm. No country or culture is ever just one thing. So perhaps it's a direction to be precise and to not generalize too much.
And if there are lessons from history, why don't we learn them more often, Giles? That's a big question.
Yeah,
I mean, that was probably very unfair.
In 30 seconds or less. Yes.
If I knew that, I'd be a very, very rich man. But
do you think politicians are sometimes reluctant to do what they know is the right thing because in the short term they're frightened about the backlash?
Sometimes there is that. It's, you know, what is politically expedient, and, you know, timing is everything. When do issues happen? And hit you. So yes, sometimes it is. I mean, I look at the world now, and it is in my lifetime in the biggest state of flux that I can ever imagine. And you sort of look at the sort of series of unintended consequences of certain actions happening.
Charles Kenningham and Diane Roberts are my guests today. You're listening to Weekend from the BBC World Service.